Welcome to The Kitchen Table, a show dedicated to helping you escape diet culture, gain trust with food, honor your body, and live a brighter life. Hello, hello, and welcome back to The Kitchen Table. I'm your host, Alicia Brown, a non-diet dietitian, and today you are in for a treat. We have Victor, who's an Ayurvedic doctor, the co-founder of the International Institute of Ayurveda. You might remember him. He's been on the podcast once before, Victor, or twice before?
Once before.
Just once before. That's right. But we'll have you on a bunch moving forward, I hope, because you are so well-versed in Ayurveda and the Vedic sciences. And it runs in tandem with conversations about intuitive eating and healing our relationships with food and body, which means, I mean, you are such a joy to have on the show for that reason. Victor, you're also a gifted pulse reader specializing in Ayurvedic diagnostic techniques and health counseling. And his in-depth, individualized approach to health offers clients and students a detailed and encompassing perspective on underlying causes of imbalance. That's what we're going to talk about today. Victor's approach to wellness emphasizes the role and importance of lifestyle and dietary balance. He offers support often needed to successfully address the root cause of illness and restore the body to total health. Victor, thanks again for coming on today.
Thank you for hosting me again. Okay.
Yes, my pleasure, my treat. I'm so excited to have you back here at the kitchen table. And you know, one reason I loved our prior conversation, and for everybody listening, I will link our prior episode to the show notes of this episode, wherever you're listening to it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, look in the show notes and listen back to our former episode. Excellent episode on the intuition and being able to access our intuition. But today, I even want to climb a step deeper. Oftentimes, I find in my work with clients, Victor, I say, you know, like, it's not even about the food. We think it's about the food, and we make up stories about the food because of diet culture, the society we live in, and we see food as something that, like, we can control to try to improve our health, improve our bodies, quote unquote, to be more acceptable in the culture that we live, to appear healthier, to appear like we really got it all in life. We can like try to leverage food as a way to change ourselves for the better. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, as you know, I said in your intro, it's like there's an underlying root cause for desiring all of that change and all of that control. There's like a desire to leverage food to access deeper parts of who we are. Maybe we feel like there's something missing. So I want to talk to you about root causes to health today and how we can kind of address the root cause of some of our food stuff, the worries, anxieties, and frustrations that we have about food, way at the bottom, way at the core of some of the conflict that we feel about food as well.
Yeah, that is a super important topic and more relevant than ever as we in our culture move further and further and further away from our natural food habits as just a, you know, species that has existed for many thousands of years. We're living stranger than ever in the food realm. You know, just think about it. 1,000 years ago, there's no such thing as most of the stuff our diet's comprised of now. And we existed that way as just a biological entity for a long, long, long time. And we've only changed in the past, 50 years, really, maybe 100, we'll say 100 years. And that's a very short time to make such a giant change. And all the studies and stats show there's no mistaking it. I mean, we're sicker than ever. We may live a little bit longer because we're artificially kept alive by very powerful medicines, but that does not mean we feel any better. And it does not mean we're any less diseased. So there's something to consider in all that. But to your prompt, you know, there's a hunger, to use that word appropriately in the context of food, right? There's a deeper hunger than what we actually eat. And if we don't satisfy that hunger, then we take it out on our diet, basically. And there are many layers to that. So we often ask, okay, you know, we see, okay, I'm not healthy. I'm not eating right. We can know that. And then, you know, you say, okay, well, what do I do? The first thing I want to do is fix my diet. Well, what does that even mean? I mean, there's one question, right? Because if you go online and type in diet, you're going to get 20 billion different things. And you're going to have people trying to sell you this and people trying to sell you that and on and on and on and on. And it's a big mess. So, but do you ever wonder why you end up choosing the diet you choose? You know, why did you land on the keto diet, or why did you land on the Atkins diet, or why did you go to Weight Watchers, or why did you pick Alicia, or why did you go to Victor? Mm-hmm. Right? That's what I'm talking about, that layer. The why behind the choice that's made. And a lot of times we don't even really reflect on that. We just say, "Oh, because, you know, I like Alicia, she's nice." Or, you know, I like the image of the CrossFit champion on the keto diet. I want to look like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But then we don't ask why. Why do we want to look like that? What's so appealing about that to us? And when asked that question, and this is something I've done in clinic over many, many years, and started following the breadcrumbs to what the root cause is, because that's what Ayurveda always is a lot of times people don't know the answer to that question. They don't really know why, you know, or they're unwilling to say why, or maybe even to themselves. You know, well, the reason I want to have that CrossFit body is because I want to be sexually attractive, because I feel very insecure. And the way I know how to stay stable in my relationship is to maintain a certain level of sexual attraction. Okay. That's all fear-based.
Yes.
So why the fear? And if you keep following the train back to the station, you're going to wind up at some void in that person's life, some basic void that is about, you know, in the words of Gabor Mate, who's hot these days, because he's very wise.
Who is this?
Gabor Mate. He's a very prominent. He did a really wonderful TED talk, and now he does all sorts of lecturing all around the world. He's a physician, and he struggled himself with a lot of addiction. Mm. And so he got into that world, and he really was interested in finding the root cause of a lot of addictions. Mm-hmm. Severe, heavy addictions, right? Mm-hmm. And basically he threw out the model that you can just medicate these people. I mean, he was just like, this is ridiculous. This isn't curing anything. This is making it worse in a lot of cases, right? So he was really interested in getting a root cause, and he got down to the bottom of it and noticed that what was really working was really addressing some of the voids that people are experiencing in their life, like a feeling of unworthiness, a feeling of a lack of connection, which is definitely a root cause of addiction, feeling of isolation, being cast out, unloved, unwanted, no value, no esteem, all those things. And then those play out in very subtle and nuanced ways. Mm-hmm. So all it takes is a few early childhood experiences where it's clear that you're not going to be supported in a certain way, that dynamic's not available to you, and you're going to develop some kind of void in your life. And then that's going to penetrate through all the way to your food habits. And so people ask, well, why is it so hard to change my food habits, right? You would think it's easy, but it's not. We all know that. It's because you're facing all this resistance from all these layers, all the way back to that void. And unless you deal with that, you're basically just white knuckling it through. And that doesn't work. Eventually you're going to cave, and then you're going to feel bad about yourself, and the whole cycle starts all over again. So unless we start to address those kind of, we could say, like, soul qualities, mm-hmm. that need fulfillment, mm-hmm. then we're kind of spinning our own wheels if we jump from diet to diet thinking that that's going to fix our body.
I think that's a great point, because a lot of times we resort to body change. Like, if I ask someone, like you mentioned, like, why did you choose the paleo diet or keto diet or Atkins? You know, one of the reasons is this belief that if we change our bodies, we'll improve our life and have the tools to do it through the structure of the diet, right? But then when we see that fail, it almost reaffirms all of the negative experiences from the deeper layers that you're actually alluding to as well, the deeper traumas that say, you know what, like, actually, I can't do this. I really am unworthy. My body really isn't attractive when we gain the weight back. And so that's why the dieting cycle and this obsession with weight loss, and that's what we're wanting on the surface. But when it's not achieved, which for 95% of people, when they try to white knuckle a diet, as you said, it's like, when it's not achieved, it goes deeper than even just like, oh, that diet didn't work for me. It's reaffirming all of the negative experiences that we had that go down to that core void that you're mentioning. Do you feel like that's true in your experience? At least that's what happened for me and many of the clients that I work with too.
Yeah, you said it beautifully. It reinforces the very lack that we experienced early on in our life or are currently experiencing in our life. And then, and you know, if you notice that, it sets up a little bit of a self-sabotage loop, right? You go into the next diet already feeling shaken. Yeah. And already unsure. And not only that, you got other insecurities piled on top of that. Other life stresses piled on top of that. It becomes nightmare. Sure. It becomes a whole ball of craziness, right? And not to mention, we use food as stress relief. So if you take away that, then it doubles down on your stress load.
Yes.
And everything just becomes unmanageable, intolerable, and life loses its luster. And then who wants to do that? You know, oh, for what? For what? So that I can pacify a fear that I'm not going to be usually sexually attractive, maybe even to myself, right? Mm. I want to look in the mirror and feel good about me. And, but even I lose that. I look in the mirror, maybe I get a moment of saying, hey, I look better, right? But at what cost? And for how long? Because especially with men, right? If they're sitting in the chair across the desk from me, we talk and, you know, let's say a guy who's all muscled up comes in and we talk and it's like, oh, it's great. I love it. You know, I'm very disciplined and I stick to a diet. And it's like, oh, good. You know, and, but he can't, he can barely, his chest has collapsed in because his musculature is so too much for his frame. And, you know, he's completely shut down emotionally and on and on and on, but he can discipline himself, but at what cost and for how long? Cause that guy, maybe now he looks good, but another 10 years, he's going to get injured and he's going to break down. I promise. I've seen it too many times. Now, that's a generalized statement, right? So I'm not saying everyone is that extreme or that's an archetype, we could say. But the important part of that is if you're feeling resistance towards staying healthy and keeping healthy habits, you can be sure that something's going on a deeper level and you need to address that.
Oftentimes though, Victor, it's like, oh, we want to work through that resistance by just being more disciplined. We put it back on ourselves and we say, oh, we just don't have the willpower. We don't have the discipline. For the man that you mentioned, you know, like maybe he's looked at or idolized by some that think, oh my gosh, he has so much discipline. He has so much willpower. But it seems like you Absolutely. See that situation differently and you're looking at it with this lens and you're like fearful of burnout. You're fearful that he's not in tune with his body, maybe with his emotions, with maybe getting in touch with what his body needs. Maybe you're sensing a void in that experience as well. And so how do you address that void? How do you address that root cause so that we can get more in touch with ourselves and really ask the deeper questions of what we're really needing or what we're really needing from food?
Yeah. So you start getting a feel when you get to know someone better, you ask a lot of questions, you start to get a feel of where they're struggling.
Yeah.
And then I start there, you know, you just go on an inroad and eventually it will lead to what they're lacking in. I'll just say, you know, their soul, right? A core quality or a core essence that they feel unfulfilled that is causing them suffering on a deep level. And then that's going to, you'll then see how that plays out into the body image that they create. So a lot of times for men, they're looked up to in that way. Or like I said, it's for sexual attraction because it works. You know, the guy who's more physically built and all that stuff will often have more access to all that stuff. So, and he knows that and he wants that, but why the obsession with that? Why the armor, right? Because that's what over muscling up does for a man is armor. Basically it could be a woman too, but I'm just talking in generalities here. Right. So you got to talk about the fear behind the behavior. And a lot of people aren't willing to talk about the fear because they're afraid of talking about fear. So then you can talk about that. Right.
It's way easier to follow a diet, way easier to follow a diet or a meal plan. Yeah. Just Alicia, just tell me what to do. It's like people that don't want to climb in deeper to doing that introspective digging to develop some type of introspective awareness or understand themselves on a deeper level. I worked in this area too. I worked in weight loss and I just worked really on the surface. I totally saw this, Victor, until I saw so much guilt, so much shame, so much resentment.
Yeah, absolutely.
It started eating us alive. That resistance, instead of just dismissing it, what if we acknowledged it and climbed deeper? Like for you, like if you're noticing resistance with those that you work with, what type of questions do you ask or what might you advise like the audience? Say for a specific scenario, one thing that I've been hearing lately is I'm feeling resistant to movement or exercise. What would be the next step that you might advise to somebody who's kind of like feeling that resistance and maybe feeling like, oh, I don't know if this is serving to my body. I don't know if I want to work out today. What's the next thing that they could do to kind of see like how they can meet their body's needs? Or is there kind of more digging if they're just kind of like climbing on the surface, feeling like they have to push through a workout?
I would say, you know, I would look at that as a surface level issue, not that it needs to be, not that it should be ignored. I'm not trying to dismiss it. I'd just say it's surface level. Like, I feel sluggish. I don't want to work out. So next question would be why? And I'd see what they say. Right. Yeah. So, I'm just making up an example here, but I see it in clinic. You know, what's the point? Okay, well, there you go. Now you're on to something. What's the point? They've given up on something. Well, there's a reason they've given up. They've been disappointed too many times. Why? Where's the disappointment? You know, I'm never going to be loved anyways, you know, right? That's a very common thought that we carry in our down days and down times. Well, where did that come from? Why are they feeling so unloved? It's like, and then you trace it back or trace it not necessarily back in time, but back to its roots, maybe even in the present moment. And then maybe back in time after you get to it in the present moment. And then are they even connected with that? Do they even know? Are they even feeling that in their body, or have they created an intellectual protection against why they feel that way and don't even really go there in their body? So they're ignoring their body, right? And now their body's reflecting that by becoming sluggish and maybe obese or, you know, lethargic and full of toxicity. So you can tell them to eat carrots instead of fried chicken, but they're not going to do it because what's the point inside their mind? I'd rather enjoy my fried chicken. That's all I've got left. That's something I hear, right? All I've got left is my ice cream. That's it. Everything else has left my life. Well, you're dealing with tragedy there, right? I wouldn't try and change your diet until some of that's dealt with, or at least talked about.
Absolutely. Like, it seems like on the surface, it seems like there's just like this black and white. Do I exercise? Do I not exercise? But really when you got into like, how are we feeling and why are we feeling that way? That requires some body attunement. That means that we have to get out of our head of like, should I do this? Should I not? Am I healthy? Am I not? Get into the body. How is the body feeling or reacting to the thought? Why is the body feeling that way? Where did that feeling exist from? Where are the origins? Would you agree that like, that's something that's really hard to do by oneself? Like, I can't imagine myself being able to really sift through this work initially to really explore in this deeper way without actually like articulating that experience to someone. I feel like that creates the story that we can hold on to and see if it feels like truth to us or not. It can't all exist in the mind, but when we can leverage the sensations, the emotions, the feelings of the body, connect with them and articulate that experience to somebody else and have them be able to hold it. Like you, yeah. When you hear these stories of despair and hopelessness, you don't dismiss that. You're like, oh, I see that. Tell me more. But right. When I see my own hopelessness or despair, I'm like, how can I get out of this right away? It's like, do you feel like articulating that experience, working with someone like yourself, can really help someone climb, well, into those feelings to help understand themselves in a deeper way?
Yeah. I mean, yes, the answer is yes. Right. And I'll just be personal about it. I use people. I talk to people that way. I didn't do it without the help of certain people who I could trust. That's the important part. I found people I could trust and who could listen, and not my mom or dad or sister or brother. Right. So, and not my best buddy who I used to go drinking with, not that guy either. Someone who actually was a little bit frightening to me at times because they would tell me the truth after listening. Right. And that's not always easy, but that person's your best friend when you're trying to make a real change at the soul level, or trying to have something fulfilled that will then resonate through the rest of your life. So that person has got to be honest. They've got to be a good listener and willing to listen to you. And they've got to, like you said, be able to handle some negativity that's going to come out of you, because there's going to be some anger. There's going to be some fear. There's going to be all that. If that person's afraid of your fear, you're not going to feel hurt. And then you won't feel expressed. And also, if you try and do it alone, maybe you might get somewhere, but your mind is going to trick you. It's going to happen because it's the mind that got you into this position in the first place. So And I do it myself. Like I'll catch myself. Your mind makes up stories. I feel something in my body and the mind makes up a story about why it's there.
Yeah.
That's probably not why it's there. So we play all these games and then, you know, we find ourselves 5 years later in the position we're in. And then we look to the same mind that's been a slacker for 5 years or whatever and say, discipline, you know, without the help of anyone, or I could do it on my own. But that is the disease. I can do it on my own. That's a symptom of an isolation and, you know, pushing away culture where you have to stand on your own 2 feet without any help. That lacks compassion. So you're not going to heal from that space.
It lacks connection. And I think that connection leads to the healing. You know, you've heard this phrase. It's like, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's sometimes like, dang it, it's really hard to handle the truth. I had a client the other day just say like, oh, Alicia, I think I hit a wall. And it's like, you know, yes, I think with that, this takes work. I think it takes time. I think that there's like this constant with compassion, with acceptance, with not a desire to just fix, but more a desire to just like feel and validate and explore and be more curious rather than judgmental towards ourselves. We can find that source of truth. But I think it takes little bites of truth with the willingness and openness. And like you said, just a lot of love and compassion and somebody to hold some space for us to explore that, that we'll actually do it. When you've worked with someone who's been able to access that deeper truth, and when you've helped them access that, then how have you been able to like help them kind of like back on the surface with like health promoting behaviors? Like then how do those impact their life in greater ways and actually help them serve themselves in a deeper, more soulful, satisfying way?
Well, it's a great experience because one, if you're fortunate enough to be sitting in front of something, having this type of conversation that's open and curious and explorative, as opposed to demanding and just pure discipline. I'm not saying discipline's bad. I'm a big proponent of discipline, right? But it's got to be put in the right place. You can sometimes get the experience where someone realizes something for themselves, makes a connection, and you watch the wave of relief flow over them. Yeah. You know, it's like they just put down a 10-pound bag of rocks that they've been carrying. And from that place, there's so much more openness and even excitement about adopting new habits that will make them feel better on a physical level. And now you have a motivation, whereas before there was resistance. So it's not just from resistance to neutral. It's better than that. It's from resistance to motivation. And then you're on the right track. Then change comes much easier, much easier.
Well, it's almost like there's a shift from like unworthiness to worthiness.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now I want to feel healthy because there's something worth being healthy for. Yeah.
I've asked my clients before, back when I was in the weight loss paradigm, I would ask them like, what's your desire to lose weight? Where did that come from? What will losing weight do for you? And it's kind of like that question that prompted this rabbit hole of what the void is. But it's like when we remove weight loss and actually get to focus on filling that void with our purpose, or filling that void with connecting ourselves with actually the true essence of who we are, weight loss becomes something so secondary to actually nurturing ourselves in a way that feels supportive for the rest of our life, rather than being caught up in this yo-yo dieting cycle. Do you find the same in your work as you're healing people with Ayurvedic practices?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I tell people, if you want to lose weight, forget about weight loss. The more you hold on to the weight loss thing, yeah, sure, you may lose some weight up. Again, I'm speaking in generalities. I'm not saying people haven't focused on weight loss and lost 100 pounds, or of course you have stories like that. But on the whole, the focus should not be weight loss. The focus should be, I want to feel good. And yes, I want to be attractive, and I want to be vital and vibrant and all those things, right? That's the focus, not I need to shed poundage. It's like, well, but what about the diabetes and the hypertension and the all that stuff? Oh, yeah, whatever. I'm on medication for that. I just need to lose weight. I don't treat people like that. That's not the conversation we're going to have in the Ayurvedic clinic, right? It's like, okay, that's fine. I get why you came here, but we need to change focus. We need to change gears, because the obsession with weight loss is part of the disease. So the more you double down on that, the worse the disease gets.
that is put so clearly and so well, that the obsession with weight loss, it is the disease. It perpetuates the disease. It's the origin of the disease that's infecting our mental, physical, and emotional health. On the contrary, since we know that now, and since you, when you started stating at the top of the episode, you mentioned like we're just discovering this. We're only like 100 years into the weight loss obsession, but now we know this, you know, what can we do with it? Well, when we remove that weight loss obsession, wow, can we nurture ourselves in a deeper way? Can we look inwards to really know ourselves better so we can feed ourselves better, so we can move ourselves better? Wow. What are some of the ways, Victor, that you've seen somebody be really successful with health promoting behaviors as a result of feeling that void? Like with that motivation, then what comes next? Like now, how can they make this routine? How can they make this their life?
Yeah. So it has a positive snowball effect. So we all know the negative snowball effect, right? One thing goes wrong and then that makes another thing go wrong. And before you know it, 20 things gone wrong, but you can have that effect in the opposite direction. So, you know, I'll just use an example from the clinic. I had a client who was in an abusive household, right? So she was living with two of her brothers. One of them was abusive and an alcoholic and actually physically abusive. So I didn't know this. She didn't talk about this in our consultation, but by asking questions, one of the things I had her do was when she liked to cook. And I said, well, when you cook, I want you to sing and dance. Right? Yeah, great, right? To make it a more joyful experience, and it's good for your vagus nerve, it's good for your autonomic nervous system, all that stuff, right? It's a little trick to hack, if you even want to say it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So silence on the other side of the, this was actually a phone consultation, right? Silence.
Okay.
Are you okay? I can't. Can't what? I can't sing and dance in the kitchen. Well, why? Because if I do, I'll get abused. Okay, so forget weight loss. She needs to get out of that house. So that became our protocol. And there were all sorts of fears we had to deal with, all sorts of self-worth issues we had to deal with, all sorts of, you know, I can't, I don't have the money. There's no way I can do it. It will never happen. There's no apartments available, on and on. If I feel guilty for leaving my brother, my mom doesn't want me to leave my brother. He's in pain too. What's he going to do? On and on and on. All of it, right? The whole Pandora's box opened up. But she did it, worked through it all. She worked through it all. To her credit, which is massively courageous, right? And worked through it all and found this wonderful, within about 4 months, found a wonderful apartment. And so, okay, now without any focus on weight loss, we changed her diet a little bit because, and we took out just the very worst thing she was eating, okay? But didn't make all these massive, you know, micromanage her food and all that stuff, no calorie counting, nothing like that, right? Within that 4 month period, she had lost 35 pounds just by dealing with those fears alone and not being in a constant state of threat and stress. That's it. I mean, that's a perfect example. And maybe not all of our lives are that extreme, but the extremity of that, it's not really an extreme example. That stuff happens all the time. It's commonplace, more common than it should be. But even if your life isn't that extreme, you could take a lesson from that experience, because we all have our version of that, even if it's not that clear and in our face. So that was her secret to weight loss. And then since then, of course, that counts as nurturing, right? She got herself out of a situation, and not only got herself out of a situation, she got herself into a really great situation. So she doubled up on that positivity. And then she lost another 15 pounds shortly after that, another 15 pounds shortly after that. And she, you know, got a raise at work, and, you know, it all started going the right direction. And of course she's got more to go and all that, but you guys get the idea. It's a perfect example.
I'm sure if we had her on the show today, she's not attributing her success with her mental, physical, and emotional health to weight loss right now.
No, not at all.
My life. Weight loss was the thing that made my life so much better. And I got this promotion and I got to do the things that I wanted to do. I was more attractive and all of the things. I'm sure she wouldn't come on and say that. What do you think she would say? What do you think she would attribute her success with her health to?
I think she would say, I was able to talk to someone first, right?
Yeah.
That would be number one. So that started it. And I got a different worldview from my own and my family's reflected back to me. So I didn't just hear my mom's voice anymore saying, you have to take care of your brother, right? I didn't just hear my brother saying, you know, you're worthless and you're a piece of crap. I got another voice telling me what I believed was the truth, or I even struggled with that, but at least I was able to accept it as true because there was a part of me that believed that it was true. Yeah. And I believe that I was worth not being abused. And not only that, actually having a good, safe place to live. And so then that started to change and it became so much easier for me to change my other things. And I felt a lot of relief and I'm very grateful and I'm happier and I'm feeling better. And she would say all those things. She wouldn't mention weight loss once.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. That's such the beauty of your work and a testament to you as a practitioner to really be able to see experiences like this. And I've had similar experiences in my own in the work of intuitive eating because I'm not afraid to hold space for these big conversations. I'm not afraid to hold a lot of shame and a lot of guilt and a lot of really hard stuff because whenever there is contraction, there is room for expansion on the path of integration and finding ourselves and discovering ourselves. You know what else you did for that client that I want to reflect back to you really quick, Victor? You held space for her potential to know.
Absolutely.
Man, you held the vision for her to live a better life for herself and to be healthier in more ways than through weight loss, but to really see her live life differently and more in alignment with who she really was and what she really more deeply wanted. And I think that that is really critical to total health and healing.
Yeah. And that's why I think when we're stuck and we all get stuck at those times, we can't rely on our own mind alone to get us out because we're stuck. And it can really help when someone else steps in and says, okay, I know that you've got this myopic vision on how things have to be, but please let's widen the scope a little bit because, and let's face it, there were reasons and motivations she had for staying as narrow as she was.
It's protective.
Yeah. And she had and there was a part of her that wanted that.
Totally.
And so, but when she was able to broaden her vision beyond that small part of herself, now possibility opens up, you get different desires with different possibilities and those will carry you away.
And she decided she didn't want to tolerate things that she was tolerating.
Absolutely.
She wanted to break free from things that she didn't even know she was in bondage in.
Exactly.
Perspective.
And so, yeah, it takes another person to give us that perspective often. And I think that's especially true when we're stuck in like an addictive pattern, like many of us are with food.
Mm-hmm. Feeling like it's the only thing there for us or the only thing that can satisfy us or the only thing that we can use to cope. Absolutely. We use the food to fill that kind of void and also to fill our void for control. You're right. There are so many layers intertwined with the food experience here, but how funny it is and how real and truthful it is to say that oftentimes it's not about the food and there's something deeper to address underneath our food stuff and our body stuff, the worries, insecurities, fears that we have that drive a lot of our behaviors today. I encourage everybody listening and instead of feeling so driven out of fear and making food decisions or thinking about your body, how can we address this fear? How can you work with somebody to maybe help you address the fears that you have, fears about weight gain, fears about poor health, fears about the effects that your lifestyle right now has on your body? Can we address these fears so that we can allow ourselves room to grow and expand and nurture ourselves, not from a place of fear, but from a place of love instead? Victor, if anybody here wants to work with you, they want to learn more from you, they want to really get in touch with you because they find that your approach right now is truly compassionate and that you see them as a full, total human being and that they have all of these parts and all of these layers. And sometimes we feel like, you know, there's only this one sliver of us that people can see and we only want them to see our best versions of ourselves. But they learned today on the show that you can see the whole complex nature of a person with a compassionate lens that wants the best for them. And so can you share with them how they can find you, how they can potentially work with you? And please tell us about the school starting in January as well.
Sure. So the easiest way to get a hold of me is through the website, which is iiayurveda.com. And there's an email there, reception@iiayurveda.com. And I'm easy to get a hold of. And we're launching our Ayurvedic school, and it's already launched technically, but our next round of programs is coming up in January 2022. So we have a professional Ayurvedic training program where we certify Ayurvedic practitioners. And we also teach a course called Ayurveda and the Vagus Nerve, which is a very cool course. And of course, you can get more information on the website. And please reach out. And I like to offer a freebie, if that's okay, Alicia.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So you can reach me for just a 15-minute, we call it a Prakruti reading. That's a way we read your Ayurvedic constitution. So the core constitution of your body that you're meant to be in balance with, that's the Prakruti. 15 minutes, I can tell, and just give you some basic feedback on kind of where the realm of balance might be for you. And just schedule that by sending me an email at the reception at iiayurveda.com email address.
Wonderful. Thank you for all of your sharing today. Please, if you're interested in learning more about Ayurveda, or you're interested in having a Prakruti reading done by Victor and connecting with him, you will not regret it. He's so personable. As you know, he's so fun and more so wise and intelligent. And so thank you, Victor, so much for being on the show with me today. And for everybody else listening, let me know your feedback on this episode. I would love to know where this deep message landed with you today. You can find me at @AliciaBrown_AB on Instagram. And yes, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Enjoy it. We'll see you back after the weekend for Monday's episode. Take care. Thanks again, Victor.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Talk soon.